If you run a small business, profits can get squeezed when inventory doesn't match up with production. What you need is a tool for modern times, the IBM personal computer. Not only can it help you plan ahead, it'll balance your books and give you more time to make dough. And the cost? That's the icing on the cake. Your own IBM personal computer. Try it at a store near you.
Imagine a brain whose left side is as brilliant as its right. A brain as artistic as it is logical, that can calculate and create. Such a brain exists in the remarkable new Apple II GS. Brilliant graphics, brilliant color, brilliant sound. To help you use both sides of the most personal computer of all, your mind.
Hello and welcome to Geekcast Radio. This is episode 81. The awards are over, folks. I'm, of course, TFG1 Mike. Joining me, as always, usually most of the time, is Steve Megatron. Hello.
Usually always most of the time. I love that.
Well, you know, I mean, between 75 and 80, I don't think you were on any of the episodes. So, I mean...
I played the fifth.
Yeah. We are here, and Steve is going to take us through an audio history of the various mediums, past, present, and we'll also talk about how they all collide and combine and what will happen in the future here in this episode. This is The Evolution of Technology. Oh, boy.
Yes.
Outside of an actual television or cassette recorder, I think those are the two earliest technologies I remember, obviously. Hey, obviously, you had stereos and stuff like that back in the 80s, but I remember, was it 80s? I could be wrong in my dates here, folks. I'm old. My memory isn't so good. I think it was somewhere between 86 and 90. Where I had went over to my aunt's house, and my cousin Bobby had a really, really old-ass Apple computer. Well, it wasn't old at the time, but now it is. And a modem, and he was telling me about how he's talking to people, like, halfway around the world. And I'm like, wait, what? How do you do that?
Skype?
Yeah, right. The 80s would be a completely different... We wouldn't be in the world... You know, we always watch things that... Your favorite franchise did it. You always watch things where people time travel and change something, and then it creates a completely different alternate timeline. If we had Skype back in the 80s, we wouldn't be where we are today.
It would have been literally where Back to the Future predicted it.
Yeah, speaking of which, none of that crap has come true. They lied to us.
Actually, the webcam on the TV thing.
Okay, well, yeah.
There's that. The video phone.
But, yeah, the video phone. But
Star Trek did it first.
Oh, Lord, here we go. You know, but the the shoes were a lie, even though they're supposed to be coming. The jacket was a lie. The shark still looks fake. So that's one thing that was true.
C3D still looks fake. Doesn't matter what timeline.
Yeah, I have been making that joke constantly. Anytime anyone brings up the future this year, I just say randomly, yeah, the shark still looks fake. Most people get the joke. Some people don't. So where do you want to start with this?
Well, I was thinking we could start out with the earliest devices we remember owning, and then kind of going into the kind of the history of some of the, or more or less the timeline that, as far as we can remember, of starting with the audio and then going video and then going computer, and of course by the end of it they all kind of collide. So.
For me as a kid, as far as audio goes, I remember record players, I remember vinyl, I remember because it's so funny. To this day, I remember in 1983 or 84, I was 3 or 4 years old, and I can remember this as clear as day. At any time between those 2 years, or maybe 85 or 86, I would constantly have my dad put on his record player Hall & Oates' 1982 release H2O, because I loved the album cover that came with it. I don't know why. Don't ask me why. Everybody knows that the H2O album cover was a little bit controversial, seeing as how it's the two of them on the front, face to face, sweating bullets. On the back of it's like somebody's skin with sweat. I don't know why I like that album cover as a kid. I have absolutely no clue, but I just absolutely love that. And I remember listening to Maneater on vinyl. After that, cassette deck. My mom had a Sony Walkman. I had, your average, record cassette deck. And this is so funny. It's going to tie into the visual stuff here in a moment, but so funny. 1987, late. I don't remember when it came to VHS, so I'm going to say 1987. Transformers the movie was out. Wasn't in theaters anymore. It was out. It was ready for, public consumption. I remember constantly having my mom rent that movie and making sure everybody was out of the living room because I tried to sit there and record the entire movie on audio, on cassette. I could never do it right because I could never be quiet enough, or something else was happening in the background of the apartment or whatever else, and I never got it until, you want to talk about something really strange here. You fast forward, so let's say 87 to 2009, maybe. So almost 20, it took me 22 years to get a full audio formatted version of Transformers the movie, and I did it with the DVD and my computer recording device. Of course, I had ulterior motives at the time because I was putting clips into the TFG1 podcast, episode 16, and all that stuff, but like it took me 22 years to to get a good high quality audio version of that film. Don't ask me why, folks, why I wanted audio only for Transformers the movie. I don't know. I've always been one of those people that anything that's on TV, I either want to be able to hear it after I'm done watching it, or I want to be able to see it after. I want to be able to pull it out of the TV and actually own a piece of it. I still have a scrapbook, and I kid you not, I will take pictures and I will put them in the post. I have a scrapbook of various things that I had to do for a class project of like what I used to do in my younger years and whatever else. I actually had pictures developed. They were kind of pretty bad pictures since you're trying to take a picture of the television set, but I actually have pictures of the Captain N logo and the Super Mario World logo, actual physical pictures that I took, that my mom's ex at the time, now ex, but then boyfriend at the time, took for me off the TV. And look at nowadays, I can sit here and I can watch something on my computer and I can screen cap it and it's high quality. It's this whole turnaround. I do remember Beta, but I don't remember it as well as some others might. I remember my uncle had a Betamax player, and it was right around the time where Beta was going out and VHS was like the new hotness. You know, to quote Will Smith, Beta was old and busted and VHS was the new hotness. but, I mean, VHS, everybody under the sun that grew up in the 80s always remembers that slogan, be kind, rewind. And I actually remember getting a few additional fees for not rewinding a few times. They used to charge you at video stores if you didn't have your tape rewound. What always used to piss me off is we had a VHS player that would auto-rewind once the movie was over, once the tape got to the end. It would auto-rewind and eject. So if I was laying there and I fell asleep in the middle of the movie, I would then have to watch the whole movie again to get back to where I was. I mean, yeah, you could fast forward, but it wasn't very accurate at all. So yeah, I mean, you know, Beta, VHS, vinyl, cassette. I remember the birth of C. Like, what I remember is each time a new technology came out, it was like this super luxury. It wasn't cheap. Like CDs, I remember my dad telling me that he spent $25-$30 on a Reba McEntire CD or something like that. I could be wrong, but it felt like, as a kid, it felt like, oh my God, this is the new thing and this is very expensive and oh my God, you better not break this kind of thing. And yeah, I don't know. What about you? What are the first technologies you remember?
I'm of the audio cassette and VHS tape era.
Yeah.
Unlike some other people. so yeah, there's that. My mom had records and a record player. So there was, I was familiar with that. So, you know, she would play some of those. We had, the old Sony Walkman, which had the cassettes. We had a boombox in every room in the house with cassette player. Only two of them had CD capability, which was a big thing.
Oh yeah.
Because it, although it was introduced, like, I think it was late 80s, it was expensive as all hell. So there was that. Yeah, we had, I think I had maybe 10, 15 cassettes. And the beauty of it was, you could record off the radio. If you had a tape recorder, you could record it yourself. Which I did early podcasting. Right. So yeah, I did that. The VHS, I had more tapes than I knew what to do with. Which the fun thing about those are, if you didn't have the tab pulled, you could record over tapes that you already owned, or if you put tape over it, you could fix that problem. Which I'd done on occasion. So I mean, there was that. It was kind of fun. One of my most played VHS tapes was probably it was an animated He-Man movie. When he goes to the New Adventures.
Oh.
It's like the movie one that goes to the New Adventures. Huh. Like where he's going from the old timeline to new timeline. So I had that. I played the G.I. Joe 1987 movie over and over to the point that it killed the tape.
Yeah.
I played Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, over and over and over. I also had... my dad had showed me the art of attaching two VHS players together and recording one to the other.
Yep.
To duplicate cassettes. Which we did with Transformers.
Oh, yeah.
When we got into that, which was like mid-90s. So, yeah, there was that as far as the video and audio is concerned. So, I mean, those were pretty much the earliest I can remember.
Yeah.
And we had a ton of it all, but it was all a big deal then, but I do remember the days of having to rewind all your cassettes, and it was a pain. And some people actually spent the money to have either VCRs that did it for you, or they had little boxes that you had to pop it in and it would rewind it, kind of like the video store.
Right, yeah.
Or the famous thing with cassette tapes where the tape would constantly pop out and you had to put a pencil in there to rewind it back up.
Right, yep.
Which was a pain in the ass.
Oh, yeah.
I always hated that. Or making things either go really fast in a cassette and making them sound like chipmunks, or making them sound like they're in slow motion. Those were always fun, too.
Yeah. As far as the compact disc, Sony and Philips were the two companies were pretty much the pioneers of. They actually, you know, had, according to this, they had eventually, compact disc is an evolution of Laserdisc, and that's one thing I don't remember. I don't remember Laserdiscs at all.
Before we kind of get into that.
No, I know, but I'm trying to get this out here. Sony and Philips independently in the late 70s collaborated to produce a standard compact disc format, which was made available in 79. So the CD actually started in 1979. It's crazy.
Among other things.
Yeah.
The entire, I guess, kind of going the route of the audio timeline, like vinyl was around back in the 40s.
Oh, yeah.
And then they kind of evolved it into bigger sizes. Like they had the 7-inch, you know, the 45 RPM, or 10 and 12 inch for the 33 and a half, 33 and a third RPM, which is actually funny. 33 and a third.
Yeah.
57, they had the stereophonic vinyl record, which was 45 degree, the 45s. And then, 58, they had the tape cartridge.
Yep.
Which kind of came out around that time. And then, in the early 60s, they had the 4-track, which I had never heard of, followed by the compact cassette, followed by the 8-track a couple years later. And then in the late 60s, almost 70s, they had the microcassette or mini cassette.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, in the 70s, they go Betamax, and then Laserdisc, and then compact disc. Which to me, like, I knew about Laserdisc, but I never knew what the hell it was.
Yeah.
And I knew of Betamax, but I didn't. I thought that was a video format.
Yep.
I didn't realize that it was also an audio.
Oh, yeah.
And then of course, we go to the HD compact disc, and then in the 80s, and then they go digital audio tape, which I didn't know was something, or digital compact cassette, which I didn't know was anything either.
Oh, God, I remember
hearing about. I knew about mini disc.
Yeah, I remember hearing about the DATs. People always used to talk about those all the time. I'm like, what are you talking about?
And then, of course, we get into the early 90s. We have, like, the wave. Like, we start getting into digital computer formats.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Waveform, digital, or Dolby Digital, MPEG, Layer 3, which is MP3.
Mm-hmm.
Digital theater system, DTS, because then we ended up getting to DVD, with DVD audio and Super Audio CD.
Yeah.
And then a ton of other formats were introduced, like Windows Media, the free lossless audio codec, advanced audio coding, and then it just, you know, of course, it progressed to what we're using now. HD DVD, Blu-ray disc. It doesn't seem like Blu-rays have been around since 06.
They have.
It just seems like it's been a while, but
God, Blu-rays have been around for 9 years. Oh my God.
Oh, they're pretty much phased out. I mean, for the most part. I mean, people still use them, but for the most part, it's not as relevant as it once was.
Oh, no. And do you remember the Blu-ray HD DVD wars?
Yeah. HD DVD actually came out before, and it's funny because it lost because of the studio backing.
Yep. What side were you on when you were, or did you not care?
I didn't care, but I was more on Blu-ray because the discs were more widely compatible with everything.
Yeah.
And they had a lot bigger film selection. And I think the equipment was cheaper, too.
Yeah.
I mean, they were all still expensive, but I think it was more, like, you had Sony backing it, Warner backing it, Paramount. Like, everybody was backing it, so it was kind of pointless to get HD DVD at that point.
Yep.
And then, then we got to the micro SD and all that kind of format. So it was kind of, it's funny seeing the evolution. And then what is that one called? It's the Ultraviolet.
Yeah.
Which, as far as I know, is pretty much blown over.
Yeah, Ultraviolet is not,
I never cared for that. Like, I know that some discs had the ability where you could hook up to iTunes or hook up to Amazon and download the content through that, which I found to be better than having to go through this method. But either way, I didn't care enough to have to mess with that.
Yeah. I mean, for me, once MP3s were here, I'll say this now. I used to love in the 90s to get on my computer and, I'd have gone out and bought a CD or something. Like, this is late 90s, like 97, 98, something like that. I'd go out, buy a CD, and I used to love, because at the time, I didn't have the internet. I used to love being able to just go through there and do all the coding myself for the tracks once I imported it. Because at the time I was using Windows Media Player, and you had, because I wasn't connected to the internet, well, they can't search for what, right now I could go over to my shelf and I could pick out the Planet of the Apes 2 CD television soundtrack from La La Land Records, pop one of the discs in my computer, and iTunes will automatically find the tracks if they're listed anywhere online. Back then, I had to enter all... I used to love doing that. And now, with iTunes and with AutoFind and everything else, it's like, oh my God, why was I wasting my time all these years ago?
Well, it's like back in the day when we all used to rely on things like Napster and, mm-hmm. and LimeWire and Kazaa BearShare and all those now pretty much defunct downloading, Morpheus and WinMX programs to rip stuff. I mean, nowadays it's either you buy it or you torrent it or you download it through iTunes or you get Amazon or one of those methods. I mean, there's a way to get it no matter what way you're attempting. But it's I think it's easier to get a hold of anything you want now.
Oh, absolutely.
Whether legally or not. But I think that also it's nicer not having to... I mean, I still think it kind of sucks that you get to still spend the same amount as buying the disc. But I understand the reasoning for it because you're still supporting... You're giving more of the money actually to, in a sense, to the artists instead of... Even though they're still getting kind of screwed...
Well, not really. I mean, a 70-30 deal with Apple isn't bad.
But then after your agent and then after the recordings...
Okay, well, yeah, but, and then, okay, and I'm just going to use this as an example. You take a band like Theory of a Dead Man who will sell 100 million albums or, their album might go gold or platinum or whatever else. I mean, in the long run, once everybody takes their cut, they're still left with a somewhat... decent amount of money.
True.
I mean, it's not like, I don't know. It's just one of those things where I would like to know. This is one of my questions for the listeners for this episode, and hopefully people will comment on this. Anybody that used to work in a record store, do you know the actual percentage that the store took from sales versus what the artist would have got? That's what I'd like to know. Like you're saying that it's so much easier now and the artists still are getting paid. But I'd like to know what a Sam Goody or a Record Town or an FYE.
Well, yeah, Record Town is FYE now.
Okay, well,
they got bought out in the late 90s.
I'm just saying.
What their cut is compared to like a digital media standard.
Right. I'd like to know what the actual record store's cut would have been for, let's say, all right, perfect example. Everybody's going to love this. I want to know what the cut was for whatever record store it was, FYE, Record Town, Sam Goody, Music Land, which Sam Goody eventually bought them too, but on Nirvana's Nevermind. On the album Nirvana's Nevermind, I want to know if anyone knows what a store's cut would have been from selling one CD. Because I want to compare it to what, if someone knows what the cut of an iTunes... Well, we know 70-30 is the deal, usually, I think, isn't it? So, I don't know. I'm just curious to find out how much stores actually used to make off the artists. Because the whole thing with Napster and everybody else and Metallica speaking up and saying, oh, well, they're stealing our profits and they're stealing this and they're stealing that. And that's, I'm not denying that. That did happen. But, I mean, what's more of a steal? You not getting your proper wage from being sold in a record store or someone completely take... I mean, I'm just curious as to what the numbers would be. Because, you know, I've been... I don't know if you'll love this, but you watch Shark Tank, right?
Yes.
Recently, in the past week, I think as the time this episode goes up on Friday, the previous Sunday, I saw something on Food Network, a new series called Food Fortunes. It's essentially Shark Tank, but for the food industry. Where people actually make, like, if they have a food that's a product, they'll go into the little mobile kitchen that they have there, they'll prepare it for everybody, and then you either, you know, if you're successful with the test audience, any of the four negotiators can take you to the negotiator. It's the same thing as friggin' Shark Tank, but it's for food. It's for the food industry. Oh, my God. So, I'm, you know, shows like that really have, my whole point in bringing that up is, shows like that have me wondering what some of these numbers were back in the day for a single CD sale, what the store gets compared to what the artist gets.
I'd like to know what they got back then compared to now.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm like... Like I said, whatever, I don't think it was 92, 95, whenever Nirvana's album Nevermind came out, I want to know what the store's cut was in the 90s.
Okay. jumping into... little bit of the VHS, since that was such a big part of history, unfortunately. Those big clogging space hogs that they were. Now you can hold your entire video or VHS library on a fraction of the DVDs, and then if you decide to put them on an external hard drive, you don't have no space taken up. I never knew really what these labels meant, but the tape labels that were on them, I just bought whatever was going to hold the most TV. when I recorded them.
So you're talking about like the 120 and the
160, T90, yeah. T120, 160, 180, 200, 210. See, then they had the E120 through 480, which is insane the amount of tape that it had to hold. But like the E480 on SP mode, you could hold 5.5 hours, almost 6 hours of television. Mm-hmm. On LP, you could hold almost 12 hours. Mm-hmm. EPS LP, you could hold 17 hours. And that's on like NTSC, which is like pretty much the main standard.
It's the standard for the US, yeah.
But I think I used to get like the T120s, which were the ones that if you did LP, you could do 4 hours, which was sufficient for most people. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I used to record things such as like Beast Wars, whenever Weird Al showed up on VH1, like any of the Star Trek marathon things, or like the, like when they did the 30th anniversary of Trek,
mm-hmm.
Stuff like that.
See, for me, both audio and video cassettes had these labels, had the 60, 90, 120. And I kind of knew, that I just kind of figured it was, 60, that means it's an hour. You have an hour of storage space, or 90, you have an hour and a half, or 120, you have 2 hours. I remember having so many damn different movies recorded on so many damn VHS tapes. There was one tape where it was Three Ninjas Kick Back, TMNT 3, and something else I can't remember. There was one tape that was Robin Hood Prince of Thieves and RoboCop and something else that I can't remember, but I remember, and I have no idea why when I was a kid we recorded the movies we recorded in the way, like, we would record, say, RoboCop, or say, because we actually had HBO. When I was a kid, we had HBO. I don't know if we had it legally, but we had it. You know, so I was taping movies off of that left and right. And my mom would always go back over and label them. And, you know, right at the top, you know, you list the first movie, in the middle is the second movie, and in the bottom is the third movie. So I remember VHS is at least holding 3 to 4 movies total. And it was, for me, and this actually happened a few years ago, too. I remember as a kid looking at these VHSs and like, okay, I'd like to watch that movie that's in the middle, but I don't want to have to fast forward through the whole first movie. So I'm like, oh, I'll find a cartoon on TV or something. And then, you know, a few years ago, a number of years ago now, about 7 or 8 years ago, I had a huge DVD collection. And this is right before I started podcasting. You know, some weekends when there was nothing on, I would go over to the DVD shelf and I would look through everything and I'm like, I don't want to watch that. I don't want to watch that. And I don't know what it is with me. It just, there's just a lot of things that I had, I just didn't care to watch again. I don't know why. I don't even know why I collected the things.
There was a lot of stuff I recorded, but again, I didn't. Some of them, we were so OCD, we knew what was on each tape, mm-hmm. at what place, in what sequence. Like, we just had it memorized, so we knew exactly what we were looking for. Mm-hmm. And if we didn't, either my brother or I remembered. It depended on the tape. We each had our own set.
Right.
So, kind of jumping gears a little bit, what's your earliest computer format that you remember as far as disk-wise?
Oh, disk-wise?
Yeah, and then I'll run through the brief history of that.
Oh, Lord. Well, it was probably 5 1/4 and 3 1/2.
Okay.
I mean, you know, your standards. I'll say this. I didn't have a personal computer in my home until 1990, 91, maybe 89. I don't remember. I remember my aunt had a computer, and I used to love going over there and playing on her computer and all that stuff. But yeah, pretty much 5 1/4, 3 1/2 is what I remember for the most part.
See, I remember those as well. I remember the tape backup that yeah. they used to have back in the day, which my dad used to back up his computer through. And they were like, they looked like VHS, or not VHS, they looked like audio cassette cartridges, just, you know, encased in like a plastic. And you just pop these cartridges in. It almost is akin to like a Nintendo cartridge, just smaller.
And you didn't have to blow in them.
No. And it would, you know, make a copy of your system, and then you just put it in, and then. But it took an obscene amount of them to copy your system. And then, of course, we had the... they actually had 8-inch floppies, believe it or not, in 71. And then they later... and they only held, like, 80 kilobytes.
Oh, my God.
Which ain't shit.
No.
You know, they used it about 5 years. And then marching forward, they used... starting in 76 to 82, they started using these high-density 1.2 megabyte 5 1/4 floppy disks, which you started seeing games pop up. And it was kind of interesting seeing that those things were actually truly floppy disks.
Oh, yeah.
Because they actually bent.
Yeah.
They were like paper almost. We had a few games that were like that. We had the 5 1/4 floppy drive, and you had to bend this tab just so that it would read.
Yep.
So those were kind of ridiculous. And then, of course, they come out in 82 to, you know, pretty much present day, the 3 1/2 floppy disk, which held 1.44 megabytes of space. On smaller, and they had a tape that went around inside them, and then it had a metal sleeve that covered it up, and they had a tab that you could prevent it from being written on after you put something on it. Which was kind of nice. Back before the days of flash memory or cloud computing or burning CDs, I had an entire lunch bag full of these. backing up, you know, because at that time I had played around with Microsoft Paint just Paint at the time on Windows 3.1. And then when the internet came along around Windows 95 time, I started downloading like Transformers, Star Trek, like just anything that would fit on these things because I thought it was cool. And of course, I still do that. I just dump it in my documents folder because everything I can download now wouldn't even fit on a floppy. it would take an obscene amount to download the amount of stuff I have. But I remember having hundreds and hundreds of these things. I eventually started going through them, and it turns out that a lot of them went bad.
Oh, yeah.
Over time. And the few that did remain, I just didn't care anymore. I think I made it through about half my floppies, and I just threw them away. I was like, I'll start over.
Do you remember? Well... Have you ever seen a TV show, and I'm not talking about, like, American Pickers or anything. I'm not talking about reality, but I'm talking about, like, a television show where they find something that is from, like, the 1800s, and it's yellow paper, and you can barely read it and that kind of thing. That's the way the floppies went. They kind of were like that yellowing aged paper from 100 years ago.
Well, the sad thing is they still sell them in the store.
I don't know why.
I don't know why either. They do not sell a computer nowadays that even comes with. They quit selling them back in like 2008.
Yeah,
they stopped putting floppy drives in them. You might see them with SD memory in them now, like SD card slots of varying degrees and USB slots. But you will not see a floppy drive.
No.
And they cost as much as buying a Blu-ray burner now because they're so rare.
Why are floppies still in stores?
I don't know. I used to have a floppy drive in my computer until I upgraded it this last time. And I never used the damn thing. Yeah. I gave the thing to my brother because he had He has varying, you know, he has a newer machine and then he has various older machines.
Are you talking about Brian?
Yes.
we should have had him on this because, oh my God, that kid.
He actually owns just about everything we've talked about.
Your brother.
He goes to rummage sales or like flea markets and he will pick this shit up and he makes it work. I'm not even joking. Like, he's got 8 tracks. He's got 4 tracks. He's got, he's got, you know, a lot of that obscure weird shit that nobody else cares about. I mean, but there's some people that do care about it.
Your brother Brian is he is a classic era technophobe. He is someone who loves classic technology and will always be buying it. He's that old man who is like, you and your kids and your eye doohickeys. You
know? Well, he made his computer into a TV channel on his on his UHF TV. Like, he made it broadcast into a wireless signal to be downloaded into his TV as a channel.
Oh my on 13. God.
Like, I don't know how he did it. I know he did it because I've seen it. But he has done that. I don't understand. But it's quite amazing. Like,
every time I see him post on Facebook about something he found or something he bought, I'm like, oh my God, that is so old.
He will find it. Like, if there's a will, there's a way. I mean, I know I'm teasing him, but he does know all about this stuff, and if he doesn't, he figures it out, and he's pretty talented with it. So, you know, I mean, everybody has their own things that they collect. That's just what he collects. But yeah, it's just nuts the kind of stuff that he'll find. He does have an entire audio cassette collection, a VHS set collection, and like, as I've gotten rid of things, I just give him my old stuff because he has use for it, whereas I do not. I am not tied to old technology. I will dump it in a heartbeat to get what's new. I want the new hotness. to the point that I drive my wife nuts.
All right, so since we're talking about technology and computers, and I know you're not, you are so anti a certain fruit, and we'll get to that in a moment, but
what?
You are anti a certain piece of fruit.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll get to it in a minute. Hang on. I remember when I got my first personal computer as a kid, like I said, it was 90 or 91. And I actually went to this place. Somehow my mom's then boyfriend was able to get me a grant because I was born with cerebral palsy or whatever. I don't know. Somehow we were able to get a free computer worth $3,000 at the time.
Yeah, which is sick.
Yeah. So they gave me a choice between the Apple IIgs or some IBM machine. And I picked the Apple IIgs because we had apples in school.
To be fair, the IBMs were garbage.
Well, the reason why I didn't pick the IBM is because at the time, everyone thought that my vision, because I do have, without correction, I have 2200 vision in both eyes. In my left eye, I have 2400 vision. With correction, if I wore my glasses, I'd have 2060 in my right, 2100 in my left, and 2060 in both. But for me, because the way that the drunk doctor delivered me, and I'm not kidding about that, I've heard my mom say that the doctor was drunk that night. Hence why I have cerebral palsy. Yes, I know she should sue.
I would have done more than sue.
Yeah,
I would have killed that son of a bitch.
Because I was delivered, I don't want to say incorrectly, but not quite the way I should have been, and I have cerebral palsy. I also have optic atrophy with nystigmatism, so I can never have LASIK. I can never have any kind of eye surgery to correct my eye because they don't currently have the technology, which is surprising. We live in 2015, technology for everything. They don't have technology to repair nerve damage to your eye. So I have optic atrophy with nystigmatism. The funny thing is, with my eyes, my right eye is my dominant eye and my center eye, but I have like zero peripheral vision on my right eye. It's all center. My left eye, I have pretty much zero center and I have all peripheral. So I can be sitting here looking at my computer and also looking at my front door and looking back at the back of my apartment where my kitchen is. My point in all of this is, when I was choosing this computer, they thought I needed voice modulation because they thought I was, as a kid, I was classified as legally blind. They thought that I was pretty much blind, and they thought I was going to need audio help, like, you know, audio readers and that kind of thing. So I just didn't care for the voice for the IBM computer. It didn't sound right. The Apple computer sounded better. So I had the Apple IIgs. I had I think it was an Epson dot matrix printer. Oh my God, that thing was so slow. We ought to find a sound effect of one of those old printers and put it in here.
Except it was more like...
So I got this computer, and I had it for a while, and I had it pretty much until I probably graduated high school, I guess. When Mac came out, when Apple moved away from the 2 line, and they moved to Macintosh, for me, I don't know what it was. I had switched to a PC. I had switched to Windows by then, and going back to an Apple product just, oh, when it came to a computer, it was like, oh my God, this is all ass backwards to me. So, Steve is not a fan of Apple.
I hate Apple. My first experience with Apple was in high school, uh-huh. And it's because one of the teachers in a science lab had it, and they got a virus on it. And I was like, not sure... bulletproof aren't now, are we? And because I was like the guy that fixed shit that I didn't understand. So I had to mess with that. I managed to also crash Mac at the same time in removing that virus. Again, I didn't understand the operating system. The next time I would touch an Apple was going back to college in 2013. Mind you, when I touched the last one, it was 2002. And then before that, I'd never touched one. I owned a 486 DX4100. I owned a 286, a Pentium 133, a Pentium 300, Pentium 500, Pentium 667. And then I ended up getting my Core 2 Duo. Then Core 2 Quad, and then I have my i3 now. Mm-hmm. And then I also had an AMD somewhere in there, but
I think my system now is AMD. One of the tower I've had since late 2009, early 2010.
I'm biased. I like Intel. Just like I like NVIDIA.
It's funny. Have you seen the Intel commercials with Sheldon?
Yeah.
Oh, God. He is the perfect person to do those commercials.
I agree. But, yeah, getting into some of the other formats, then, you know, of course, the CD, you know, compact disc came along for the computer. And we had a quad speed, you know, 4X CD drive in our 486 DX4100, which... It was kind of hit or miss if it was going to work or not. We weren't sure. It did work successfully with that system. And actually, that computer was actually faster than a Pentium at the time.
Dang.
Which was incredible. You know, we had the hard drive in it. It had a 404 megabyte hard drive and an 800 megabyte hard drive. And then combined, you had like over a gig. You know, 32 megabytes of memory in it. I think that one had 16, and then the next machine had 32. But, and then you had to have a sound card back then. Like, you actually had to have a sound card.
Yeah.
I mean, you pretty much still have to have a video card. they have anything good, but most of it comes built into the chip or into the motherboard nowadays. The audio has been built into the motherboards for like the durations of the 2000s. You can still buy one external if you want, but really there's no point. And then a lot of your devices, like if you have a Blue microphone, it has the microphone technology built into it, and it's just USB. You have a USB Logitech headset, it's all built into that too. I mean, so it really, if you're looking for any of that, a lot of it's kind of built into the equipment. But anyways, then there was the burnable CD in 97, which I'm still still sorting through some of those. because when I used to go over to my dad's, I used to work on my various Transformer sites, and Dragon Ball Z, and my emulator site, and I had some other ones in there here or there that were ideas that never went anywhere. And I would burn a new CD every time I went over. Anytime something changed, anytime I downloaded something. So I had about two or three spindles of CDs that I was going through. And those are like a 50.
Yeah.
I've still got 25 left to go through. Because periodically I go through them and I download what I may need. Right. And then I throw the disc away. Mm. And then it's one of those things I do when I'm bored. Mm. So I still have a spindle, like that half a spindle sitting on my desk area in my office. Mm. For that time that I'm bored and I feel like going through some discs. So yeah. And then of course we have a drive that I've never heard of called a magneto optical drive.
Hmm.
A mod drive. They considered it a mutant drive.
Well, it is named Magneto, so.
Which I think is kind of fitting. size could range anywhere in the capacity of 128 megabytes to 9.2 gigabytes. It's something extremely rare that most people don't really even know about.
Yeah, I've never heard of it.
It was 1990 to president, but or to president.
President, to, which one?
W. it says it's not prominent in the U.S. though, so it says maximum capacity is about 2.6 gigahertz now or gigabytes now. But mini disc was something that was around for a little bit, and I do remember that. But it could go up to 1 gigabyte, but it was it looked like a mini CD stuck inside of a floppy.
Yeah, that's the thing though. Like every time, like okay, I'm trying to think. There was some sort of free promotion where they would give you a mini disc, and I'm like, okay, what am I supposed to do with this? Because it didn't fit in the tower. The disc itself, not any outer shell or just the actual physical disc itself. I'm like, how is this supposed to fit in my CD tray? Microcassette. Micro cassettes I got because you actually would have to have a micro cassette recorder to go with them. I understood that.
Well, like the funny thing is they did have a thing. They had it wasn't a mini disc, but it was like a micro CD.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, you know, that inner rim of your CD drive,
right?
Like that little tiny part of the rim that's in the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
They fit in that perfectly. And they could hold up to I think 256 megabytes on them, and I did get a few of those for a little bit. I think I bought like 10 of them, and then it just wasn't cost efficient. But I ended up ditching those later for flash memory. But Colorado Backup, I don't know if you remember that.
Mm-mm.
My dad had that. That was 1990s to 2001. That it was the Colorado T1000, by HP, which my dad had in the computer, and you can hold up to about 14 gigabytes, it says, but I think at the time it didn't hold nearly that much. But it did back up quite a bit. And then we get into Compact Flash. SanDisk. And then you had the various flash chips, and then you get the zip drive, which was basically like an ultra thick floppy that came out around 94. It was kind of replacing the floppy at that time. Mm-hmm. You could get an external or an internal drive, and it could hold up to some drives could hold 100 megabytes of storage. Some of them could hold 250, and some of them could hold 750. And it was iOmega, which was the brand or the company. Those kind of went away too. They had this other drive called a Jazz drive,
mm-hmm.
which the zip drive my brother I believe had, the Jazz drive my dad and I had. And these were like 1 gigabyte disks that you could pop in and out, and some were 2 gigabytes, but I had the one. We basically would load all of our games and all of our stuff on the drive and then run everything off of it. And then as somebody would swap to a different person on the machine, we would just pop the drive out.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of nice. I mean, it was cool. I remember those. Then we get to the CD or DVD.
Yeah, DVD was great. DVD still is, like...
It's more cost efficient than a Blu-ray, though. That's the thing that's nice about it, because I burn... When I have to burn something for somebody else, file-wise, I dump it to a DVD, because it holds 4.7 gigabytes on a single-layer disc, which is, for most people and for most applications, it's... beneficial that way. It's sufficient. It's better, because a CD you only burn, it's 700 megabytes. 4.7 gigabytes is better on a DVD. If you get a dual layer, it's like 8.5. But Blu-ray burnables are actually getting cost efficient now. I still do not have a Blu-ray drive on my computer. I have a LightScribe DVD burnable in my system, and it burns CDs too. And the theory with the LightScribe is it's supposed to be able to like imprint a picture in certain types of discs on the top with lasers. But
see, yeah. I have a Blu-ray drive on my tower, but apparently I need some sort of cable for it to show up, like for Blu-ray. Like I sat here and I went out and bought, and I only did this. This is a few years ago. When Batman Under the Red Hood came out, they were specifically putting a special feature on the Blu-ray only about the history of Robin, or the history of the Robins, and I bought the Blu-ray, and I'm thinking, okay, well, it says Blu-ray drive, put the thing in, would not play at all. And apparently I need some sort of cable or cord or something or other between the monitor and the tower for the Blu-ray to actually be active, I guess. I don't friggin' know.
It doesn't make any sense. There's something.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't know. I mean, I have our good buddy and friend and fellow podcaster that's on the network, Jeremy Fine. He sent me his, because he's in the process of moving, he had a secondary PS3. He sent me that, and I still have that. And that's a, you know, it's a Blu-ray player and whatever else, but I wanted to use that for streaming since I have Wi-Fi in my place. But apparently the PS3 can't hold a connection to save friggin' crap. So I watch my DVDs on it and that'll be fine, but I'm not gonna, just because I have a Blu-ray player, not that I could financially afford it anyway, just because I have one doesn't mean I'm gonna go out and buy Blu-rays.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the movie for me, whether I buy a Blu-ray.
Yeah.
If it's an action movie, then it warrants a Blu-ray.
Yeah.
If it's not, and it's just a regular movie, I'll buy the cheaper DVD, or I'll just watch it on Netflix or whatever. So, yeah.
For me, I'm more into the and I know you're gonna go this way here in a second, but for me, honestly, I'm more into the digital media now than physical. that's just the way it is.
Well, speaking of digital media, we get into the portable hard drive era.
Yep.
Which is USB.
Oh, yeah.
My first one of that was 250 gigabytes. I have a 2 terabyte one out in my living room. Now, I actually want to get a smaller one, like a 1 terabyte one, that's small enough to fit in my pocket, like the size of my phone.
Right.
So that I can get away with not having to have all of my flash drives anymore, my USB flash drives.
Yeah.
Because I have 6 of them that I carry on me.
All the time?
All the time.
Oh my God.
One being 64 gigs, 2 of them being 32 gigs, one's like an 8 gig, one's a 4 gig for work, and another one's a 16 gig, which is a backup for my wife's computer. So, because Windows does not give you disks anymore, you right. have to actually make your own restore disk with a flash drive. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I did that. But yeah, the you know, you get the SD memory, which is pretty much replaced film. Like, in the film industry as well as like photography. Because when I was learning in my media class, shooting video, they made us buy these SDHC, which are, you know, the SD high quality SD cards, and then it had to be like class 10, which has to do with the speed. Mm-hmm. And we recorded everything onto those, which, you know, again, it's SD memory because it's flash memory. It's and that's the same thing with a USB flash drive. It's all the same. Everything's these two formats right there are pretty much killing everything else. But right. you can hold so much on them, and they're so small. Like a couple of the USB flash drives I have, that we plug into like our Blu-ray and everything are actually as thin. It basically disappears. There's enough of a nub on it. I don't even know where the hell they put the 32 gigs that's on it, because it's like a nub that's on it enough to pull it back out. But I plug it into my Blu-ray player with the files that we have on it, and it, you know, it disappears when you plug it in. So I mean, it's, but it holds somehow 32 gigs of data on it. So and then they got the ones that stick out like a thumb that you hope that nobody runs into.
Right.
And then of course we have cloud media, which again, like everything is pretty much moved from all these various formats to USB or SD or flash memory or the cloud. And your videos are either Blu-ray or they're streamed or they're MP4s or among various other video formats. And your audio's either streamed as well, or it's a MP3 file or some other high quality format.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's one of those things where we're to the point now in technology where everything has to be super high quality.
Garbage in, garbage out. Yeah. So the higher quality you have it to begin with, the better quality it is when you downgrade it to a different format.
Yep.
Because MP3 is actually a lower format. There's a lot higher quality audio formats, but they're huge.
Yeah, but MP3 is the universal format at this point, for the most part.
Well, it's been the universal format. The thing is it just, it's not as high a quality as some of the other aspects. But
yeah.
Again, where do you see the media going in the future? Like as a new format or as a new way of holding it, or
I really think that the tablets, the iDevices that they have now, iPads and iPhones and iPod touches and whatever else and all that stuff, whether it's them or whether it's any other companies that are doing smartphones or I really think it's I see commercials all the time for various not just Apple, but like I see commercials for Samsung where it's like, hey, you can now, you know, start this on your tablet and then shoot it to your TV and there you go, it's on your TV and you don't have to worry about anything else and whatever else. So I really think it's going to continue down the path of super high quality cell phone, like, you know, cell phone multimedia. Really, I don't even think you can call cell phones anymore, because, you know, back in the 80s, the first cell phone was like a super heavy, large, almost like one of those army walkie talkies that you used to see. And now they're so thin and small and but they pack such a big wallop.
Should be called PPCs. Portable personal computer.
Okay. I would just say media devices, but all right.
because they're basically like carrying around a PC in your pocket.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Oh, pocket PC, that's another term that's phased out.
maybe we
It's
can
not good it, marketing anymore.
Maybe we can bring it back.
No, I mean, I see things continuing on the same methodology that they have going, which is the cloud, because everything's about instant gratification. It's about, you know, beaming the information from device to device without having to worry about it. Like, I have a new router. And these new routers, they have a USB port in the back of them where you can plug in an external hard drive. And basically, from any of your devices in the house, you can stream information from the external hard drive.
Absolutely.
So, like, if I had a media library, like, of audio that I wanted to play across it, I could do that, but I don't really care. most of what I want is already on my PC. Mm-hmm. And if it's not, you know, I go download it to my MP3 player or my flash drive or something. So I mean, there's that, and then of course, you know, you have things like Dropbox or OneDrive, which I use to upload content to, so that I can get to it from anywhere.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't necessarily have to use my flash drives.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even though I would like to have physical copy backups of some things.
Yeah.
I just don't have the space on them.
I'm surprised that they have not made a 1, 2, or 3 terabyte flash drive.
You know, you say that, but they've been working on getting them bigger and bigger. I think that they're already at 256 gigs on a flash drive now, which is kind of interesting. Like I remember buying back when 128 megabytes was a big thing on a USB flash drive.
Right.
I used to have Predacon Empire, my original Transformers site. Well, my basically second one, because I had a copy of somebody else's site that I made. I used to have that housed on a floppy when I started it.
Mm-hmm.
To outgrowing the floppy to getting into the 128 megabyte flash drive, to a 256 megabyte flash drive, to a 512 flash drive, to a gig flash drive, and then I killed the site. Geekcast Radio, if I were to put it on a flash drive,
you would need the 1, 2, or 3 terabytes.
No, I would need the 100 meg. I'd need the 100 gigabyte.
Yeah.
I'd need like a 128 gigabyte flash drive to hold it sufficiently. I remember when it fit on a 64 gigabyte flash drive. That wasn't that long ago.
No, it's been 6 long years.
So with that, we're canceling. No, that'd be horrible if that happened.
Weekends are canceled. Reviews are canceled. Beyond is canceled.
We're done. Good night, everybody. But no, I mean, I definitely see things going along the cloud still.
Oh, yeah.
Be it good or bad, I still see it being on that route.
Mm-hmm. Whether it's the Microsoft cloud or the iCloud from Apple or...
Well, you can't trust the iCloud.
Well...
They give away your information.
Celebrities can't trust the iCloud.
No, nobody can trust the iCloud. It hands out your credit card. It's like, hey, you want to buy something? And then the other one's like, you have nude pics.
Oh, good Lord.
So I don't trust the cloud entirely. That's why you don't put shit on it that you don't want getting captured.
See, the only thing I use the cloud for iCloud is all as I know is they allow backups for whatever you buy from iTunes. And lately these days, I don't buy a lot from iTunes at all. I think in the past 2 years, I've bought a couple of albums. I've bought a couple of movies. I've rented a few, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5. I find that's what I like better about Apple at this point is when they allow the $2.99 rental of a movie where you don't have to worry about it. You download it, obviously, but once you start playing it, you only have 24 hours to watch the damn thing. Your rental, once it's finished downloading, can be it's a 30-day rental. But once you hit play, you've got one day to watch the film. So it's like, if I need something for a movie we can review, or if I need something for a Tooncast Beyond, or if I need something for whatever, if it's a rentable thing, fine, sure. I don't have a problem with that at all. But the only thing I use iTunes's or Apple's iCloud for is if... Somehow, and this has happened a lot in the past 6 months. I don't know how the hell this happens. Sometimes stuff that is in that I thought was in my library isn't, and it doesn't even show up in the cloud, and it makes no damn sense. It's like I knew I had that entire album, or it'll show up saying that I have it, but it doesn't show where I can download it again. A perfect example of this is the album Best of Bill Cosby from 1969. It shows that I have it, I can play the files, but it doesn't show me where... Like, it doesn't have a download click button at all on it. It is weird. I gotta contact iTunes about that. It's stupid. But anyway.
But yeah, I mean, I think that takes us through our entire journey.
Yep. So, guys, guys and gals, listeners, like I said before, I'd like to know what the actual record store cut was of something like Nirvana's Nevermind in 1990, whatever. I don't remember the year off the top of my head when that album came out. I know it was the 90s, though. And we'd also like you to comment and let us know your history with technology. Where did you start? Where do you see it going? All that good stuff. Coming up on Geekcast Radio, hopefully we're going to be doing something once a month that we have never done before. It's going to involve tables, ladders, and chairs, and hells and cells, and surviving series, and manias of wrestling, and all that other stuff. Mike Dodd is gonna be on with me hopefully once a month, where we're going to focus on WWE content specifically, since that's all we really watch. As far as wrestling goes, like, I don't watch TNA, I don't watch Ring of Honor, I don't watch any of that other stuff. It's just WWE at this point for me. Also, coming up on GCR, we're going to have a bunch of other ideas and topics coming out. There will be consistent content from GCR. It might be a monthly thing, it might be a bi-weekly thing. It just depends on what else I have going on, or Steve has going on, or anybody else has going on. I will say that the top 100 favorite, the GCRN's top 100 favorite video games is coming. I can actively say at this point right now, it looks like it's going to run from episode 90 to 96, I believe, or either it's either going to be episode 90 to 96 or 90 to 97. I don't have the actual details in front of me, so. That's going to be coming this summer. What else you got going on?
Working on some new projects with Altered Geek. St- still working on some other websites and still deciding what I'm going to do for class as far as the audio. I think I've narrowed it down.
I told you.
I can't. It's not going to fit the time.
You can't drag that out?
No. Unfortunately not.
He is the most comical character in that series. You seriously cannot drag Waspinator out.
It's 44 seconds. I can't drag it out.
Oh, damn it.
And he'll time it, so I can't.
Well, yeah.
I could stand there for 2 minutes. but no, I tried a couple different voices. It's going to end up being Joker, I have a feeling.
Yeah.
Because he goes over a minute both times.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious. I'm just not sure which one of his I'm going to use. I think I've got it narrowed down to one of two, but I'll reveal that on Altered Geek on a future date.
Yeah.
No, so
that would be bad timing. Never mind. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of GCR. Join us next time for another great topic. Like I said, I'm pretty sure the next one is going to be this new experiment Mike Dodd and I are going to do with the whole wrestling thing. I could be wrong, though. I don't know just yet. But unleash the geek in you, and we will catch you next time.
Hello, I'm a Mac.
And I'm a PC.
Whoa, what happened to you, PC?
Kids happened. I was bought for a home. Now I have to make movies and blogs and listen to music every night. I'm crying myself to sleep mode.
Sorry about that.
You were made to stimulate 10-year-old brains with your iLife jazz. All I want to do is balance their checkbooks.
I don't think 10-year-olds have checkbooks.
No checkbooks, no inboxes, no employers. Just wild imaginations. I have to go listen to some emo.
You've just listened to Geekcast Radio on the Geekcast Radio Network. There are several ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. First, visit the website geekcastradio.com, where you can comment on all of our different podcasts. Second, you can rate our show and leave us feedback in iTunes. Third, follow us on Twitter at Geekcast Radio. Fourth, become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/geekcastradio. Call the voicemail line, 502-526-5821. Please remember to tell us the show you are leaving the message for and your name. So until next time, unleash the geek in you.